At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. Get in the know, nonstop Vikings talk. It's Purple Daily on Score North and scorenorth.com.
You know what? It doesn't get any different, really. We've had to face Rodgers, and last week it was Watson, and Tannehill was playing good. The receivers that they're playing, and the quarterback, obviously, and it's not going to get any easier for them. So they just got to go out and keep refining their technique, keep getting better at what they're doing, keep learning about NFL football, and then go out and compete. Go out and, challenge people.
That was Mike Zimmer talking about how screwed his secondary is with Russell Wilson on the schedule next. And poor Matt Ryan, we all saw him last night. And then Aaron Rodgers, which we'll talk about that. But this is a nerd football segment Tuesday on the show. Courtney Cronin from ESPN.com is going to join. And I hear Declan, we're recording this in the morning, and he's already into the Corona Hard Seltzers.
Well, the cornerbacks and I have gathered around to have some Corona Hard Seltzers, because if you can't at least defend the pass, you can sip on some Corona Hard Seltzers.
That's true.
So that's not the worst trade-off in the world. And this month and every month, discover Corona Hard Seltzer, the only hard seltzer made with pure beach vibes, with a refreshing splash of fruit flavors such as tropical lime, mango, cherry, and blackberry lime. Corona Hard Seltzer is a tasty spike, sparkling water with a splash of natural fruit flavor that allows you to enjoy the moment in each can. Corona Hard Seltzer has zero carbs, zero sugars, 90 calories, and is gluten-free. Relax responsibly. Corona Hard Seltzer spikes sparkling water with natural flavors, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
And I don't want to be disrespectful, but I think you could have replaced George Iloka in that game with a can of Corona Hard Seltzer, and you might have had the same.
He would not mess up that touchdown.
Oh, that's brutal. Oh, you guys are, oh, man.
What? All right, let's come
back. Where's Zim's drink, though? Like, where's Zim's drink? The corners need drinks, but Zim needs a drink, too, okay?
Football.
He's got red wine.
Yeah, that's true. And a whole lot of it.
First and goal, Vikings. Thielen in motion. Dalvin Cook forward and in for a Viking touchdown. Dalvin Cook, he's going to get a first down. And Dalvin Cook pushes his way toward the end zone.
And Dalvin Cook will be a feature in our football nerd segment of the week here. It's Mackie and Judd. It's Declan producing and our friend Courtney Cronin from ESPN.com. She is a wonderful Vikings reporter. And there's a lot of things to get to here before we even dive into our nerd stats, because the Vikings, as we're taking the microphones here, sent out an email saying, sorry, Vikings fans, you won't be allowed inside the building yet again on October 18th to watch Matt Ryan run for his life. So a couple things of note, no fans for October 18th, and Courtney, the Vikings got a coach fired yesterday. So that's great.
They sure did. They sure did. That is, I think Mike Zimmer is the last coach from that 2014 cycle to have a job.
Wow.
And that's kind of crazy when you think about like how long ago that was, but also like, it feels like it wasn't that long ago, and just kind of like what those coaches have to show for it since that period. No Super Bowls among any of them. And it's an interesting thing to think about with the Texan situation, that they had every chance to win that game, and it was their own ineptitude, which was really and truly sparked by their own coaching decisions, GM decisions, play calling decisions, the whole gamut, that got them in trouble. So, I mean, honestly, you could have seen this coming from like weeks away, that eventually it was going to have to happen. And honestly, just saying, the McNair family seemed like they were really, really dug in on Bill O'Brien. It wasn't just Cal. Like, people think, oh, it's just Cal being a football guy. Like, Janice McNair is also very much a part of the decision-making process down there. And she loved Bill O'Brien. So to my understanding, it was, kind of a shock to certain people who work for that organization that O'Brien was let go, because he was basically almost given an ownership stake at this point. I mean, he just kept taking and taking and taking. Different roles, different responsibilities, sometimes too much. But I think this is a lesson in ownership, not speaking to any specific ownership group, that yes, you can go ahead and make incredible financial commitments to certain people, to certain players, to certain personnel people. And you can also cut bait just as quickly. And Bill O'Brien was under contract through 2022, and he just got the GM title in January. So they're going to be paying him for a while, but they also had to realize that the direction of the franchise was going very, very steep south. Like, it wasn't going to go get any better with Bill O'Brien as the head coach. So cutting your losses, as expensive as it may be, and as embarrassing as it may be, given this is the guy, like, you just fired the guy who put you in a massive hole that's going to take years to recover from, considering the Miami Dolphins own your first round draft pick next year and you don't have a second round draft pick in 2021. You're in a bad spot. Like, this is not a franchise I think anybody, you know, is like chomping at the bit to take over. People like throwing Eric Bieniemy's name out there. Why would he want to go there? For real. I mean, yes, Deshaun Watson's there and you do have some talent at the receiver position. The offensive line is up and down, but Laremy Tunsil's really good. I don't see why anybody would want to take that job on unless you are given kind of the Kyle Shanahan guarantee that when you take over, you have ample amount of time to make something work, because that is going to be a years-long rebuilding process, which, honest to God, it didn't have to be. If we could have put ego aside and realized that you have the best receiver in the NFL in your locker room, put the ego aside, let him stay there. If he doesn't want to practice, don't make him practice. Don't let any of your personal nonsense and your egomaniac whatever get in the way of a good franchise. Because you screwed Deshaun Watson over, and you screwed yourself over the day that you traded DeAndre Hopkins away for a bag of chips and David Johnson. And that has not worked out whatsoever. So honestly, you got what came to you. Congratulations, you played yourself, you did this to yourself. And honestly, the wave of just damage that he left in his path is honestly very disheartening to see, because it sucks when one person takes down an entire franchise, and I've never seen something like this happen before.
The cautionary tale, in my opinion, though, starts with people that own the club, the McNairs, Courtney, to your point, because of this. And it feels like we don't see this as much now, but giving the coach control of the 53-man roster, unless that person's name is Belichick, is akin to death. Because I saw this in Green Bay. Sherman had the same problem, and it was the same with Brad Childress, who did not get the GM title but had the contractual power of control of the 53. And the problem is this, and we saw it Sunday, and it's the one thing that I don't think we've ever seen consistently from Zim's players. They've had off days and they've been mad. But the second you control the 53-man and make decisions and jettison guys and cut guys and decide to pay some guys but not some guys, that's when they quit for you. So, like it takes – you can push the envelope of quitting on a coach pretty far down, and players might actually come back and be like, we should play harder for Zim or for Dan Quinn or something. I don't know.
Dan Quinn.
We should play harder for Dan Quinn.
Dude, but the
second you screw with my money and my friends and your control, and then you come downstairs. Like, this is the one thing I've never understood about really rich people who decide that they're going to go in this direction with football teams or sports teams in general. What on earth would make you think that a bunch of highly paid professional athletes could process the fact that the guy who's asking them to play hard, in Bill O'Brien's case, is also their ultimate boss? Like, you're going to – and the Houston Texans, make no mistake, they quit. Like that game on Sunday was awful to watch. It was embarrassing. They quit. And the one thing that I found to be really intriguing was watching the postgame, Courtney, with Deshaun Watson and J.J. Watt. Yep. And both of them in their comments had the passion as if they had seen a fender bender. Yeah, it sucks. Yeah, it's too bad. And I said, he's done. He's absolutely done. But that's the thing. Never give control of your team to one person. It will always backfire. Bill Belichick is such an exception. It's not even funny.
And it's just like the Belichick model is dying. Like, Bill Belichick's going to be coaching for however many more years, and you will never see something like this, like the power of control that he has over the Patriots happen anywhere else. And I've said this all along. Bill O'Brien tried to make the Patriots the Houston Texans the Patriots of the AFC South. It didn't work. Matt Patricia tried to do it in the NFC North. It didn't work, and it still will not work. Like, I don't know why everybody's trying to be Bill Belichick, because you just can't. You can't replace that, and you can't replicate that. And honestly, like, there's a lot of hubris if you think that you can honestly carry out that model. But like the Bill Belichick model is not going to last much longer. Like you, the whole thing of like trading of you letting your best player walk in free agency because you're trying to prove a point when this guy says like, I want to play till I'm 45. Like only Bill Belichick can get away with that. But like no one should be able to get away with it. I honestly think it's just straight up arrogance on his part too. Does it work? Maybe, but they, you know, they didn't really make it that far in the playoffs last year. I'm talking about the Patriots. That is like, unless that you can consistently from here on out, consistently turn out Super Bowl wins and have that same sort of power structure, I don't think it's worth it. But, you know, that's a power structure that is so entrenched in that franchise until there's a complete turnover. It's just going to be what it is. Like, why fight it? Why is Robert Kraft going to fight that? He's not. But like other places, like the Houston Texans that have made the playoffs 4 or 5 years under Bill O'Brien. And then they start to see, wow, we are really terrible. Like ownership stepped in, I think, way too late, personally. I think that they had already given, I mean, you're just throwing money out the window. I'm not somebody who likes wasting money. I'm not a billionaire, but I just think it's financially, so I get irritated. I think it's financially irresponsible and a slap in the face, basically, to like everybody in the league and really the people, the power, the people who are pushing up, holding up the power structure, your front office people, your scouts, your low-level coaches, everything, to be throwing around money like that and just be like, all right, we're going to start over. It's your prerogative. It's your franchise. Like, but you are not going to be good for a while. And you did it to yourself because you didn't have to give him the GM title. I know that they thought maybe like that he knows the team, like he's already made the decisions before. I don't know. Like, I think it was stupid. I think the fire, you know, what they did with Rick Smith was stupid. It bit them really hard. You know, Jack Easterby, does anybody know how a team chaplain can just kind of like snake his way through? Honest to God, this feels like a Judas situation.
That's what happened here once with Denny. Team chaplain happened here too.
I
don't want to alarm you, but yeah.
No, but it's utter nonsense. The guy like gets into the, like lies on his resume. That's kind of weird. And the Texans are like, oh, it's not a big deal. Like clearly it is. And then he like stabs Bill Brian Gain in the back and then stabs Bill O'Brien. The guy is literally Judas. Like, I mean, I don't want to hear it any other way. And I think it's kind of a fun religious play considering he was a team chaplain at one point. But I mean, the Texan situation is a lesson in not delegating so much power to one side. And honestly, you're just never going to see the power structure of a Patriots. Like, I know so many people have tried to make it happen before and it hasn't worked. So let this kind of be a lesson to everybody around the league that don't be Bill O'Brien. Don't try to do it this way. See, he single-handedly ruined that team the day that June of 2019, when he decided he wasn't paying Jadeveon Clowney, that was one of the many dominoes that ultimately decided that he would no longer be the head coach there.
I have a hot take for you guys, or maybe it's more just like a new goal for the Vikings this season. So they got one coach fired, Bill O'Brien out. The Vikings were just sort of the last straw there. They sort of leaned on the shaky infrastructure and tipped the building over, right? I think the Vikings can get three coaches fired this year. Dan Quinn is on very shaky ground, especially after what we saw on national TV last night.
He might not get
night,
to that
right?
game, by the way.
Yeah, that's like, is he going to make it?
Yeah, you got to get him.
Who do they play this week? We need Atlanta to like have some sort of miraculous victory. Let me check their schedule. They've got the Panthers this week. Okay, so Atlanta could beat the Panthers this week.
Or below a 20-point.
Show a little life, and then march into U.S. Bank Stadium, and the Vikings could get Dan Quinn fired on, it would be the Monday, October 19th is when he would get fired.
Okay.
And then, dare I say, two shots at Matt Patricia on Sunday, November 8th, and then later on at the end of the year, I mean, like, if he's still around in week 17, you're for sure getting him fired, right? Could the Vikings get three coaches fired? That should be their goal. Like, those are your Super Bowls. If you can finish 3-13 and all three of those wins are fired coaches, that's a win for everybody.
Wait. I think that there's a potential fourth because you're crappy and you've got two shots at the Bears and Nagy.
You think Nagy's on the ropes, though?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they have a winning record.
Yes, but I think that's more of not a 2021 move. I think they're going to clean house with that group in 2022. I think they've got one more year. Personally.
Don't you guys think? Don't you guys think? I think the thing about losing to the Vikings in 2019 is it's the edge of the cliff for coaches because basically, if you're going to lose like the Texans did, it's a give up game to what's really not a good team.
Mm-hmm.
So like ordinarily, you know, most years We lost to the Vikings. That was a tough game, man. Yeah. The Vikings are good. That defense is stout.
Now it gets you fired.
Like, this is a third-grade defense. You're picking people off the street to play linebacker.
Actually, in fact, I like the way you're twisting this. Bill O'Brien getting fired is a slap in the face to the Vikings. If I'm the Vikings, I would be offended. Wait a second. You're shocked? What do you mean?
ScoreNorth.com, I wrote that. It's ridiculous. The Vikings are the final straw of 2019.
Use it as fuel, Mike Zimmer. These teams think we're garbage, and they're firing their coaches because they beat them.
No, I think you're right. Absurd.
Whiteboard material. Are you guys ready to nerd out here?
Yeah.
Get those nerds!
Nerd!
Nerd!
Let's fire up some, anytime we can fire up some appropriate football music, I think we'll take that chance. So this is our football nerd segment of the week in which we throw out different little numbers and trends, and we attempt to tell you what they mean and why they matter or why they don't matter. Let's start off with this one here. The Vikings are different in terms of offensive power versus defensive power than they've been really any year under Mike Zimmer. If you just want to go off yards per play, which is a very simple, like, how many yards are you allowing per play? Not total yards, not garbage time as much. The Vikings have the fifth best offense in the NFL yards per play after four games, 23rd defensively. Also, the defense has generated the second fewest quarterback hits. And so, I don't know, personally, I don't see that dynamic changing a lot. If the Vikings are going to win games, it's going to be because they outscore opponents, which is shocking to say for a Mike Zimmer team, Courtney.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's the nature of the NFL right now. Scoring is way up. And it's kind of at like a really alarming rate. And maybe you expect that because defenses didn't have the time to, you know, get it together and like figure out, okay, this is how we tackle. As evidenced by the Atlanta Falcons last night, like, I don't even know if they tried. Like, wow, watching some of their tackling was
really
terrifying.
Did you see the numbers? I saw this come across ESPN Stats and Info. Speaking of Dan Quinn, by the way, Aaron Rodgers was 20 for 20 for 240 yards and four touchdowns when targeting running backs and tight ends in that game.
That's not allowed.
Not surprised.
That's not, no. I talked to Krubs. That's not allowed. Krubs. The league outlawed those two. Oh, look, it goes to a receiver or nobody.
Yeah, well, I guess if you're wondering, when's Irv Smith going to show up and when's Dalvin Cook going to catch passes? October 18th against the Falcons, it's probably going to happen.
Yeah, probably. No, I mean, I think that the trend that we've seen so far, like the methodology for this Vikings offense to win games, you're going to have to outscore your opponent. You're going to have to get in shootouts. And these games are probably going to end up getting decided in the final 2 minutes, kind of like the big scare that they had against Houston with, is it a catch? Is it not a catch? And obviously it was not a catch. And now when you think about the Falcons, like they've got a, or not the Falcons, the Seahawks, they have a terrible, they have like literally the worst defense in the NFL right now, like worse than the Texans, if you can believe that. So what do I expect? That's going to be a shootout. It's going to be like Rams Vikings 2018, where it's just going back and forth and back and forth. And someone, probably Russell Wilson's going to have a perfect passer rating. But, like, don't think for a second that the Seahawks defense is not hot garbage, because it is. And that's going to lead, you know, Kirk said, what did he say? If anytime you're scoring 30-plus points and 500, putting up nearly 500 yards, you're doing something right. Well, that's probably going to be the what happens this weekend in Sunday Night Football.
So here's a stat from Courtney's employer, ESPN Stats and Info, that Kevin Seifert tweeted out today. It's incredible. NFL games have averaged a combined 49.8 points in 2020. That's the most through 4 weeks in the Super Bowl era, which is post 1966.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is this one, guys. If you're the league, you love this. Preseason's history. Preseason games, forget the defense, right?
Yeah.
This is their dream.
Usually points. September football is ugly. I feel like maybe someone can disprove this, but I feel like teams have a hard time scoring in September sometimes, but I'll take the ugly football shootouts over like the 17-10 situations.
I feel like defenses in September aren't up to snuff yet, but they're good enough, just good enough that offenses are rusty enough that they don't look great. Now it sort of defaulted to, oh, defenses are optional. They're terrible. So if you're a halfway decent quarterback or offense, you can't help but score. So it's weird, but if you're the league, I don't think you're going to look this gift horse in the mouth and be like, too much offense in 2020.
Here's the other thing. To Courtney's point about shootouts, like this Sunday, you know, if the game flow plays out the way that it has the first month, then the Seahawks are going to beat the Vikings like 38-27 or something or whatever it is. And I think if if this is the type of game flow we're going to see for the Vikings, then Kirk Cousins is going to have probably four or five more chances late in games to add on to the game-winning drive stat that we talked about a week or so ago. Like, he's going to have the ball in his hands down 31-28 or whatever, probably five times this season.
And that's what he said, like, during his post-game press conference about the final 10 minutes. Like, they have to be better there because you're not going to always have a team that you can rely on to fall apart in the final moments of the game, like the Houston Texans. I mean, yeah, they had the Vikings defense backed up against the goal line once again, third trip inside the red zone, and they came away with no points. But, like, a good offense, it's not going to always be the case. So I think that you look at that situation and say, yeah, Kirk, like, you guys need to control time of possession there in the fourth quarter, but also, like, hit Adam Thielen, extend drives. Like, you know, you cannot fall apart. And even with a lead, they had a, 31-16 lead with 10:54 to go, and then it got cut 31-23 because of that late touchdown over George Iloka, RIP. It's not a situation that you...
You just drop an RIP on George Iloka.
Bless you, son. Bless you.
Get those nerds! Nerds! Yeah,
it's one of those situations, I think, is for any offense, you kind of lick your chops at it and think, okay, like, these are really bad defenses. You know, Atlanta's awful too. So, I mean, Kirk has back-to-back weeks where he's probably going to have to be the guy with the ball in his hands at the end of the game. Do you trust him enough to do that? Like, that's where I think you got to rely on Dalvin Cook. Just run the clock out. If you have a lead, run the ball, run the clock out, stay in bounds.
That's a good segue. Very simple. Good segue into the next nerd football statistic. Dalvin Cook, I got a couple for you guys. Actually, three here. Dalvin Cook leads the NFL in rushing yards by 50 yards right now after the first month over Aaron Jones. He's the highest graded running back just in terms of his running ability on Pro Football Focus. And according to Pro Football Focus, he has the fifth best elusive rating, which takes into account missed tackles and yards after contact. It's basically how good are you independent of a great offensive line or a mediocre offensive line. And he's fifth best in elusive rating. So all the signs pointing to Dalvin Cook emerging just like we all sort of thought he would with, you know, given the usage, as one of the top two or three running backs in the NFL.
And that yards after contact stat that you brought up, Phil, like 66 of 130 of his rushing yards on Sunday came after contact. I mean, you saw it on that 6 or 7 yard touchdown, whatever it was, the first one where he like rolls the guy off his back and then stiff arms the guy at the end zone. That's who he is. He can rise above your offensive line play. And it's not that the run blocking was bad or anything, but it's just you were in such a tight, condensed space there in the red zone. Like, he was going to be met with defenders in his face immediately, and he could still fight through that contact to get you a touchdown. So, I mean, the only thing I worry about, like, when I saw him kneeling there at the end of the fourth quarter, and I was like, oh, gosh, like, whenever it was in the fourth quarter, like, is he hurt? And he walked off, and he was fine. He wasn't ruled out. Like, I think he was able to come back in, but it's just that's the type of stuff that's worrisome. I mean, you're thinking all the contact he's fighting through. It's like, is that why you're starting to see this, like, interesting rotation later in games between him and Alexander Mattison? Maybe that's what it is. But, you know, just being mindful of that, I think, is something to consider.
So off that point, Courtney, here's my thing. Mattison's not a bad player, okay? He's fine. Backup. Mm-hmm. But Dalvin Cook is a... in this offense is one of probably two or three tops difference makers that they definitely have. I think if you really want to control the clock and win games and have the perception of play action being a threat throughout games, Dalvin Cook has to be on the field and has to touch the ball. I think if you want to win games, you need to have him, and this is a lot, average around 30 touches per game.
I think that would be an historic rate, though.
It would be. But here's
like a McCaffrey rate that's not really sustainable. But right. I agree with you, Judd. I mean,
here's the point to bring up that's extremely important about his position. Let's say you say, okay, 30 is way too much. Let's keep it to 22. Okay. Those 8 carries aren't going to come back in 3 years and be like, thank God we didn't overuse them in 2020, because now in 2023 or so, we can add carries. You can't.
But could they bite you next year when you're destined to be better next year and you run him for, you know, 400 carries and touches?
And that becomes the question is, and I know what your answer is, Phil, and I know what mine is, and I think I know what Declan's is. I don't care about the wins. I'm just saying if you want wins, which I think Kubiak and Zimmer do, I don't see a way around not overusing Dalvin Cook. This is why the whole contract thing tore me apart. I never thought he didn't deserve it as far as not being that good a player. It's the position he plays, the wear and tear, his past, and the running back position is literally a Ferrari, which you want to drive off the cliff as quick as possible, because if you don't, it's going to turn into a jalopy. And no, I'm serious. It turns into a jalopy, and before you know it, that Ferrari is chugging down 494 in the right lane going 32.
But what if I get what you're saying, but what if I want to use the Ferrari in 2021 when Daniil Hunter is presumably back?
Then you have to
and
decide.
My team is better.
Then you
and
have to
I have
decide
another...
you don't want to win games this year, which, by the way, I don't care about. I'm fine with that.
Hey, back to the show in just a second here, but a quick word for Federated Mutual Insurance Company. Federated has been helping business owners since 1904. Based in Owatonna, they are one of us. And you can follow Federated on Twitter, at FederatedINS, for fresh, relevant risk management content on a variety of topics like working in extreme temperatures, which we see a lot of here both ways in Minnesota, distracted driving, and other topics. Also, be sure to check out this month's Risk Management Corner article addressing fire prevention. Make sure you visit federatedinsurance.com to find out more information about how Federated can help your business. At Federated Insurance, it's our business to protect yours.
That's fair. And that's why, honestly, I think you're starting to see them spell Cook in ways that, you know, I know Mike Zimmer was getting some criticism about, well, why isn't Dalvin Cook in this situation? Like, it was after the, you know, after one of the field goals against Tennessee, and they had a chance to kind of, I forget what the exact situation was, but it was in the fourth quarter and he wasn't in the game. It's like, okay, well, why is he not in the game? And then there was moments in the fourth quarter, and Madison scored that touchdown to make them go up 31-16 because Cook had the big run that kind of got after Jefferson's, after the back shoulder throw. It was then Cook, I think like a 9-yard gain, something like that. Looks like he got banged up on that play. And I think they were like, okay, Madison can finish the job off. Like, that's what you have to do to preserve Dalvin Cook. But to your point about the contract, Judd, they have every way to get out of it after a year or two. I think they obviously don't want to do it 2020, 2021.
Sure.
But after 2022, they can get out of that contract very seamlessly. So if you anticipate being really good in 2021 and you are utilizing Dalvin Cook, like if you think you can still win this year, which I certainly don't, but like, I mean, I think it's a 5-11, 6-10 team. You don't want to waste that production on a 5-11, 6-10 team. I totally get that. But you should be able to kind of divvy things up, and maybe that's going to become more clear to us in the coming weeks as we start to see Madison and what his role is going to be. And maybe that's clear to Dalvin Cook. It's like, hey, we know it's probably not going to be great this year. We want to save you essentially for the following year.
Get those nerds! Nerds!
Passing game nuggets here. Kirk Cousins, we brought this up on yesterday's show, but it's worth mentioning again here. Kirk Cousins in play action, according to Pro Football Focus, a league-leading 13.5 yards per attempt. Now, just for some context, if you aren't a nerd football stat person like the three of us are, a really good yards per attempt for a full season, all different formations, if you get to like 8 yards per attempt in the NFL, that's really damn good. 9 is like, whoa, MVP caliber. Kirk is 13.5 yards per attempt when running play action, with a 132.2 passer rating. Also worth noting, Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson are the two highest graded wide receivers in the NFL through the first month, according to Pro Football Focus. So, Courtney, it would be kind of nice for the Vikings if they had a different formula where you could also put Kirk in shotgun when you're down by 14.
I know.
But like, this is what works if they can get to the point where they're leading and they're leaning with the run game and they can leverage Kirk's strengths. He's been great this season.
I just get so irritated when, like, people, all these, like, football stat people try to, like, outsmart us and be like, you don't need the run to set up play action. That's, like, a football outsider's game plan. No disrespect to football
outsiders.
What's
that voice again?
Like, no, I'm not doing it again.
Come on, do the voice again. It was great.
No, it's just, like, there's all these people who try to, like, outsmart you. Like, people who, like, you know, dive into the stats and think that they can, like, it's not actual football, but the stat nerds who, it's not even the stat nerds. It's the pseudo stat nerds who think they know everything that like try to tell you don't need to run the setup play action. Yes, you do. With this quarterback in this offense, yes, you do. He was 9 of 11 for 180 yards and a touchdown off play action on Sunday. What do you think set that up? They ran the hell out of Dalvin Cook there in the early part of the game. He had 2 touchdowns in the first half. Kirk was incredibly successful with play action because he can sell a ball, a play fake.
You know, like, what, though? I could see a scenario. You know how, like, sometimes hitters get psyched out in baseball? If it's a long at bat and the pitcher has thrown, like, 6 straight changeups, and they're like, I mean, can he throw a 7th? Like, what if the Vikings just ran 50 straight play actions and, like, never handed off?
And Dalvin never came out.
I've heard that argument before, and kind of like what it does to like shrink the field essentially. And like, because I thought, you know, last year, man, are the 49ers just going to like boot their way to a championship, like just running bootleg after bootleg with Jimmy G? And it made sense. Like, you thought about it. It's like, okay, if it's what works, and if you're getting guys to literally bite all the time on it because you sell a run, run play that well, a fake run, why not? But I just think defenses, by the time that they'll figure it out eventually. Like, the pass rush will not, they'll be able to sit back and not send guys, you know, in. And I think that eventually you will be in a situation where it's just not going to work. And I think that's what makes Kirk so good with play action, because of the way he sells it, but also how unpredictable it feels within this offense so far, because you have to account for where the linebackers are and what they're reading. And kind of like, for me, that at least is like kind of the key to making play action work, because are they anticipating a run play and they're going to be, you know, trying to stay in the box, stack the box, or are they going to be dropping back in coverage because they know you're about to pass? If it gets more predictable, like, it's going to change what the pass rush is doing. It's going to change what the linebackers are doing. And I just don't think that you'd be in a good situation to use it all the time, but they do use it a lot. I mean, I have a stat here. Let me find it. So 52 of those 65 plays that they had on Sunday were either design runs or play action dropback. Wow. 80%.
Wow.
So it's the second highest percentage of any team in the game this season.
Get those nerds! Nerds!
Coobs.
So great nugget.
It's predictable is what I'm saying. It's like it works against bad teams, I think, that you can really exploit bad teams like the Houston Texans with that type of play, but is that going to work consistently against good defenses? I just do not believe that whatsoever.
Courtney, how do you see the relationship, and this is absolutely going to be imperative, not just to 2020, but probably more so 21, the relationship between Cousins and Jefferson growing, and I don't necessarily mean from the young man standpoint. I mean from the quarterback standpoint of trust and the realization, and I know Thielen's his buddy, and man, he's fun, and I'm sure they go out to lunches together, and they talk about fast cars and sports, and oh boy, isn't it fun to have your friend from third grade basically be your teammate. But the Jefferson dynamic to me is really intriguing, because he can clearly do things that Thielen and lots of guys can't, probably on more so the Diggs side. I'm not saying he's Diggs yet.
I'll say it.
How do you see that growing, though? Because there's definitely still some trust building from Kirk's end going on there. And I think the sooner we can crack through that ceiling, the better. Because I do think this guy has some uncanny abilities to be great.
Yeah, I do, too. And I mean, if you listen, you take what Kirk said at face value. I mean, he was talking about that back shoulder throw, the 25-yard reception in, I think it was the fourth quarter, that set up the touchdown, because Jefferson had 4 catches for just over 100 yards. Each catch was basically an average of 20 yards or more, which is insane when you think about the deep ball threat. You finally found it. You finally are utilizing this guy's 4.4 speed to your advantage to run these deep overs. Like, it took a couple weeks, but they're finally doing it, so that's a good sign. But even like with what Kirk was saying, it's like, they don't practice those back shoulder throws that often. Sean Mannion like pointed that out. He's like, have you and Justin been working on this? And Kirk, like, has an interaction that Kirk relayed to us from the sideline after that pass. And it's a lot of that is just instinct and feel. So the more that Justin Jefferson can come through on his end and come down with the ball when Kirk is making those throws, the better it's going to feel for Kirk. Because there's been an argument made, like, does Kirk not trust his receivers? Does he not trust himself? Does he not trust the offense? Does he not trust his offensive line? Like, if he can demonstrate a consistent ability to let it rip like that, and trust that his guy's going to come down with the ball, throw contested catches, this offense is going to work a lot better, because there's not going to be like this, you know, running into a brick wall if something like that happens and it yields to a turnover. Like, Kirk didn't turn the ball over at all on Sunday. That was like his first game, I think, in like think five games that he didn't have an interception or a turnover. So, I mean, that's a good sign. It's and you know, you build off that by continuing to make those types of throws. Like, the throw to Kyle Rudolph, too, is kind of an underrated one. Kyle was blanketed. He had a guy following him, and he had a guy, like, over the top of him. Like, he still made that throw. That's the type of stuff from Kirk Cousins that we need to see more often, because when you have this many playmakers on offense, you don't have to always throw the ball to Adam Thielen. And that's a good sign that he's willing to not do that and trust a rookie receiver who he's even said, like, some of the stuff's just natural ability. You can't teach that. Okay, well, he's tapping into that natural ability and finding how he can, like, use that to his advantage. And I think that's going to be really good for him going forward.
Yeah. And that is...
Get those nerds!
Nerd!
Nerd!
Your nerd football segment of the week. I'll just throw this one last one out here as we say goodbye. The Vikings have 9 1-3 starts in team history now. The last one was 2013. They finished 5-10-1. Before that, it was 2010. They finished 6-10. They did make the playoffs in 2008, but they lost to the Philadelphia Eagles in the wild card round. 07, they started 1-3. They finished 8-8. 05, they started 1-3 and finished 9-7. I guess this is the silver lining if you're rooting for wins this year. Of all the 1-3 starts in Vikings history, all nine of them, their worst season is 5-11, 2001. So, if you're rooting for tank for Trevor, then this is bad news for you. The Vikings are rarely bad enough.
They will never be that bad. And that is the thing. Guys like Justin Jefferson are too talented to make sure that this team is in that awful, like, bottom of the barrel of the NFL category. Like, they are in purgatory. You're too good, yet you're not good enough. And that's why you're going to be probably 5-11, 6-10, and you will miss out on that top draft pick. You will trade back, and you'll probably get a defensive tackler or a guard.
And people are going to be pissed. That's Courtney Cronin from ESPN.com. We appreciate it. You can give us some support and help spread the word about Purple Daily by giving it a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple Podcasts, and also by clicking the subscribe button on YouTube.com/Purple Daily Podcast. All right, Courtney, have fun with movers, and we'll see you next week.